Hey, by the way, this year especially when it's one thing if you got a second string, I don't know, offensive tackle doesn't really register too much as far as from a name standpoint, going in from one school to another. One of the things this year, a lot of big name players, because they saw limited opportunities where they currently are, they wanted to play immediately. And so we see a lot of big name quarterbacks that will be playing for other teams this year in the college ranks.
We do, and it seems to be becoming more and more prevalent where you get a number of guys, a lot of them former big name prospects, former five-star recruits in some cases, who had the opportunity to go to the school of their choice, and the school they initially chose didn't suit their purposes for a number of different reasons. In a lot of the cases, just because they didn't end up winning the starting job and deciding to move on to different programs. And so seems to be kind of the modern day of recruiting, where we're at with the process right now, where not only do you have coaches who need to initially win National Signing Day to get some of these top prospects in, but this also throughout the careers of these players while they're actually at University X, let's say, while they're there, the coaches need to continue to find different ways to keep them within the fold of the program, make them feel involved, make them feel like they have a reason to continue staying there, even if they're not contributing in the lineup.
Have a chance once again to visit with football analyst Anthony Heron. Another thing too, we saw some big name coaches taking over new programs last year, and so they're entering year two with their current programs. Dan Mullen, for example, at Florida, Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M, Scott Frost trying to bring back Nebraska. Which of these guys, or is there somebody else that we're going to be talking about in year two making a big difference, big jump as far as with their current program?
I'm not sure that there's another program in college football, Johnny, with expectations that I feel like may be as outsized for where they're at in their development than the Nebraska Cornhuskers right now. When you look on the surface, the names that folks are going to know with any program are the head coach and the quarterback. And so when you look at the head coach for Nebraska, former Cornhuskers star, went on to the National Football League in a reserve role, but was around a Super Bowl winning franchise while he was there. Then goes into the coaching ranks, a very successful assistant coach at Oregon, then goes on to be the head coach at UCF, second season while he's down in Central Florida, improves by 7 wins. Then you get the undefeated season and the sort of faux national championship. But your Alabama listeners, I'm sure they know about faux national championships. There's a few of those. And then the tides passed as well. But for him moving on to his alma mater, going back, taking over for the Nebraska Cornhuskers, now in his second season, and he's got a young star at quarterback in Adrian Martinez, but at the moment, that's kind of all they have. There's really not a lot of experienced depth in the program right now for Nebraska, so where I do definitely see them improving on the 4 wins they had last year, and really it was 4 out of the last 6 games, so they were competitive early in the season while Adrian Martinez, starting as a true freshman, banged up through the first half of the year. They started to really get some things figured out on offense, and then their defensive coordinator, Eric Chenander, started to have some guys making a few more plays on that side of the ball as well. So by the end of the season, it was really a reputable program. There's just a lot of folks predicting Nebraska as a top 20 team, a Big Ten West Division champion. I don't think they're that far along in their development yet.
What about we mentioned Scott Frost in Nebraska. What about Herm Edwards with Arizona State? Here's somebody that I've always admired as a head coach. And it starts back to the days with as a head coach of the Jets before he moved on to the Chiefs. First of all, your thoughts on what he was able to pull off with Arizona State, and can he make that go from where they were last year at 7-6, even increase the number of wins this year?
That would be the challenge for Herm this year, won't it? Because last year, he was the older ball coach who'd been out of the game for a long time. So expectations were super low for Arizona State. And the advantage that Herm Edwards had coming in addition to folks just not necessarily expecting a lot out of the program because he had been out of the game for so long and he'd got a big personality, been on TV for a long time. So folks kind of viewed Herm through a bit of a sort of a cartoonish prism and just thinking he's this big personality and forgot that the guy coached in the NFL for several decades and was an assistant of the year, was a guy who coached in playoff games as a head coach in the National Football League. Herm Edwards knows football. So he knows football and he went into a roster that was very, very experienced. He had a fifth-year senior and quarterback in Manny Wilkins. He had one of the best receivers in college football, who was the number one receiver in the country when he came out, N'Keal Harry, very experienced offensive line. Enough experience on defense, but really a lot of young guys who came in and flew around on the football. And so they won some games last year. Now this year, I view the Herm Edwards year two almost in a similar frame to where I view James Franklin at right now in Penn State. And it's odd to make that comparison because James Franklin is much further along in where he has his program in place. But now that we see some experience, specifically at the quarterback position on the way out, and it's going to be likely a Herm Edwards quarterback who comes in and starts this season for him. So now we're going to see the same thing at Penn State with James Franklin, where we're going to see another program after you've got an experienced signal caller you could count on leaving the program, some other offensive talent around him gone as well. What's now this going to mean for this next phase of a head coach and trying to build his program? James Franklin already has his in place. For whatever reason, he's lost about a dozen transfer portal players who transferred out of the program. That's going to be a difficult thing for him with his competitive depth or lack thereof at Penn State. For Herm Edwards, only in year two, he's got a lot of talent he's going to have to replace. And so now this would be a proving ground for his version of recruits that he's starting to bring in on the offensive side, because he already proved that on the defensive side with a lot of true freshmen who played well for him last year.
Chip Kelly, we're still waiting for UCLA to be relevant again as far as college football is concerned. And so there was a lot of optimism with Chip Kelly returning to the college football coaching ranks to take over UCLA. That didn't really play out the way I don't think anybody anticipated or expected. 3-9, not really why you bring Chip Kelly back.
No. They spent a lot of money to do it. I mean, Casey Wasserman, and he's really the main and biggest donor to the UCLA athletic department, but others around that program as well. They went out of their way to make sure that they could bring Chip Kelly in, and took a lot of money to do it, much more than UCLA would normally spend on an athletic team, not only the buyout that they had to pay to oust Jim Mora, but then also the salary it took and the guarantees that it took to bring Chip Kelly in and some of his preferred assistants, coordinators, in with him as well. There's a big infusion of capital that went into the football program in addition to a new facility that they built out there in Westwood. So at this point, now with Chip Kelly being in year two, and they didn't quite go the route of where we saw Scott Frost take Nebraska at the end of the year, but there was a corner that was turned for UCLA late in the season last year. It just wasn't as noticeable as it was for Nebraska, because they didn't win four of their last six games. But after getting blown out in several games earlier this season and not really looking that competitive through the first half of the year, they went on the road and beat Cal. They beat Arizona at home. They lost three games in a row. One of those a blowout against Utah, but then they were super competitive against Oregon in a game that got out of hand in the fourth quarter. Extremely competitive against Arizona State. Beat USC late in the season, and then nearly nipped Stanford at the end of the year. So UCLA, really the second half of the season, was a much, much different team under Chip Kelly than they were the first half of the year. So while the wins and losses don't add up where there's a type of momentum and excitement about UCLA coming into this season like we see from Nebraska, but a fairly similar situation where you're going to have a quarterback who started as a true freshman last year for the bulk of the season who's going to return this coming year, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who's a similar brand of playmaker to Adrian Martinez, a guy who really does prefer to operate from within the pocket, but has plenty of mobility to hurt defenses with his legs and make a lot of plays outside the pocket, really suiting what Chip Kelly looks for in his quarterback. And then there are additional playmakers who are being brought in to the program as well. So it's year two for Chip Kelly, just like it is his former understudy, Scott Frost. And I do expect UCLA to look like a much better team much earlier this season than they did last year.
Anthony Herron joining us again, football analyst, includes at NBC Sports, Pac-12 Network, co-host on SiriusXM College Sports Channel 372, and more. I like the spin control, what they're doing down in Tallahassee, especially from those sites that really want fans to subscribe so they can hear more about Florida State. So now the spin control is that it was all on Jimbo Fisher, that Willie Taggart had nothing to do with last year's awful season. Last time I checked, Jimbo Fisher's team, six times last year, Florida State lost by 19 or more points. I don't remember Jimbo Fisher's team losing like that. Yeah, was it in the best of shape? No. But with that said, it wasn't in the shape of losing six games by 19 or more points in 2018.
big-time proving ground for Willie Taggart this year, largely because, and obviously you follow the Florida State program as closely as anyone, largely because of the media sensation it was that he left Oregon after one season, which really, when you think about it, even though Oregon hasn't won a national championship game, they've been to a couple of national titles. They turned into one of the main name brands in college football under Chip Kelly, and then they go through Mark Helfrich, things fall off, you bring in Willie Taggart, who's one of the hot assistant coaches, and then went on to be one of the program builders as a head coach for a couple of mid-major programs. And so now, after one season, he leaves Oregon, goes out to Florida State, takes that program over after Jimbo Fisher got them to the highest of heights with college football playoff appearances, national championship game, and the expectation always is to be in the ACC championship hunt, potentially in the national championship hunt for the Noles. And one season in, that obviously just wasn't the case. I mean, in a lot of ways, a historically bad season in Willie Taggart's first year. But like you referenced, I do agree. Jimbo Fisher really didn't leave the program in positive shape. But overall, I mean, if he would have went 7-5 as opposed to 5-7, I think the way the program is viewed coming into this season would be really different, you know, aside from just the spin control types looking at what happened at Florida State last season. But the depth of the ACC doesn't feel in the same vein as it did a couple of years back, where they had that sensational bowl run and defeating SEC teams and whatnot. Right now, you know, everyone's just focused on Clemson being the team to come out of there. And unfortunately for Florida State, they got to play in the same division with Clemson. So I don't think they're going to win the ACC Atlantic division anytime soon. But with that being said, they should be able to be very competitive. Beyond Clemson and Syracuse, I'd say the Atlantic is a division that Florida State should be able to go into this season feeling like they should be very competitive in. They should make a bowl game. We should see a several-win improvement for what the Noles end up doing on the field this year. And if that's not the case, then a lot of fingers are going to start pointing at Willie Taggart very quickly in his tenure there.
Anthony, you, as a former player, former coach, you understand the importance of line play and what Jeremy Pruitt, now entering his second year as head coach of Tennessee, this is certainly a case of inheriting a very weak line. You don't care what side you want to look on, you know, from that side of the ball. For Jeremy Pruitt and Tennessee to win championships, first of all, to be competitive in the SEC East before you even think about SEC titles, you have to be able to compete with the best of the best as far as with the line. They're not there yet. With that said, though, the fact that they were able to beat Kentucky and Auburn last year, you know, two teams that, a combined 18 wins? So very impressive right there. But there's still probably a year or two away from where maybe, if everything falls into place, that we could be talking about Tennessee again, being in a situation where if things fall in place, that they actually can compete for an East title.
And it's, you know, for Jeremy Pruitt, when he first came into the program, he was a guy who brought a lot of intensity. You know, he really got in players' faces and tried to infuse some life into the program that was necessary in a similar fashion. You know, we were just talking about Florida State a moment ago. Similar fashion to what Jimbo Fisher had to do when he first took the program over in like the last few seasons. You know, there under Bobby Bowden, things did start to wane a little bit. Jimbo was the coaching waiting, and you know, he really was able to infuse some additional intensity into the program when he first took it over. And that's part of what Jeremy Pruitt had to try to do last season. And now going into year two, it's going to be about more than just, all right, let's make sure we're playing hard on defense. Let's make sure we're staying in games. I mean, it's a very competitive division, as you know, there for Tennessee. And, you know, so to have a shot at being competitive, not just in making a bowl game this year, but saying, you know, can we get up there and try to overtake Kentucky? They're not going to beat Georgia. They're not going to win the SEC East. That's Georgia's division for this year, at least, and probably beyond. But can you get up there and make sure you're going to be able to take down Kentucky, Florida, get back to where Tennessee fans really feel like the program should be, and it really hasn't been for, I don't know, almost a generation of football fans at this point. When you're looking at them perennially being a contender to try and make the SEC championship game. It's been quite a while since you could look at Tennessee year in and year out and say that that's who they're going to be. And then, you know, you have a few players who've been lost here recently, you know, some depth within the program is something that's going to be a question for the Vols as well, because once you get past the front line, can Jeremy Pruitt really feel confident about what he's going to put on the field? If you suffer any key injuries, if you have any more defections from the program, that's going to be a bit of a problem here. And so for a program like Tennessee, you know, to have players quitting for health reasons, to have players transferring to other programs, that's not something you want if you're Jeremy Pruitt. You know, not only just because it's a bad look for the program, but because you need, in your second year in the program, as you've been bringing in an infusion of your own players, you need that term I like to go to, that competitive depth, because not only does that help you on game day if you lose someone, but just the preparation that's necessary for a coach who's very early in his tenure within his program on the practice field. It's one of the advantages that Alabama has that's so understated. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, programs like that that bring in such depth of talent, all these 4- and 5-star recruits where they can go out there and legitimately practice hard throughout the entire season. Because frankly, if a starter gets hurt and misses a couple of weeks, that reserve player who's been practicing hard and probably rotates in games because they're so deep, he's going to be ready to roll. So you can practice at a different level, a different caliber throughout the season at programs like that than you can in a program like Tennessee, who's just in their infancy and trying to build, or like Arizona State, who we were discussing earlier. The starters can be competitive with a lot of teams in the country. It's once you get to the reserves, whether you have to or if you just want to rotate some bodies in for experience, then you're not on the same playing field with the teams that are competing for national championships on an annual basis.
Anthony Heron, join us again. Before we let you go, your thoughts about Vanderbilt, Derek Mason. I know you admire the job that Derek Mason has done as head coach of Vanderbilt. The problem with Vanderbilt this year in their first three games, two conference games, at least they're both at home, but you get Georgia and LSU at home. If things don't go the way as expected, because they'll be underdogs in both of those games, this team needs to have a very short memory, meaning be able to put that behind them and not allow whatever, if it does go awry against Georgia and LSU, not to be able to allow, if their losses, to impact them the rest of the way.
And the thing that's a sneaky one in there too, Johnny, is being at Purdue in the
right
second game of the season.
I mean,
that's one at Purdue. Yeah, they've got that circled on their calendar for the Boilermakers to have an opportunity to take on an SEC foe. And obviously Vanderbilt isn't necessarily one of the prominent SEC programs on the field, but it is an SEC program. It's a program that's coming off of a bowl game. And for Purdue, where they're at in their development right now with Jeff Braum, who was one of the hot coaching commodities over the offseason and had an opportunity to go back to Louisville, his alma mater, decided not to do that, got a new contract at Purdue. They had the huge upset over Ohio State. They're going to have to make sure that they pay every attention they can, because that opener against Georgia, let's go ahead and let something crazy happen, put that one in the win column of the dog. So to go out there and be competitive against Georgia is going to be one thing. But you don't want to start 0-2 going and playing LSU and having them come into Nashville. You certainly put yourself in a position where you maybe start 0-3 going against Northern Illinois if you don't get that Purdue game. It's going to be their first road game of the season. It's going to be the only time that they leave Nashville within that first month of the season before we get to October. So I'd say out of anyone early in the season, because, I'm picking Georgia handily in the season opener over Vanderbilt. I'm picking LSU because I think they're, I don't even know if a dark horse is the right thing to call LSU. The expectations are rightfully high, I think, for the Bayou Bengals this year. So I don't see Vanderbilt winning either of those two games. From the Commodore standpoint, they got to beat Purdue. And the thing is, Purdue's really good. Like, Purdue is the team that should have a lot of expectations in the Big Ten West Division this year, more so than Nebraska's getting, because they have a quarterback who should have been the starter last year that got hurt after the opening game of the season. The backup goes in for the Boilermakers and just plays lights out the rest of the year. So the starter who's returning for them, Noah Sindelar, is going to be starting this year. He was really the better quarterback last season. They've got a lot of explosive talent on offense, and Jeff Brown is an amazing play caller. So that is definitely a very dangerous game for the Commodores in their second game.